So, hello. Here we are. This is the seventh week, would you believe? It really seems to be flying by for me. And this one is, the video is called The Path of the Soul. And this has been a really interesting video for me because it's got me looking back at different stages of my life, and I guess I started out from very, very early on when I was at school being a victim. This is my story, and as I may have said before, I was bullied at school, and that felt to me like it shaped the rest of my life, I guess, because I was always looking for circumstances. I was always looking at life from a place of being a victim, from being a person with low self-esteem and low confidence. And as I've said before, I had an insight a long time after that, when I first came to the principles, that allowed me to see how I'd been living my life as a victim. And somewhere along the line, there was a point where I felt like I wanted to do a kind of Tony Robbins thing, and I wanted to be empowered. I wanted to have a choice about how my life was. And so I did a lot of self-help stuff. I did a lot of reading on philosophy and religion and things like that. But a lot of it was very down to techniques, even the philosophical stuff, down to meditation and stuff like that. And I've said this all before. So my path to where I was at the beginning of the principles was a real mixture of the two, mostly victim, but a taste of empowerment along the way. And I was thinking about the path of the soul, as Michael calls it. And I remember looking back at my life and thinking, whatever path I seemed to be following, whether it was victimhood or empowerment, when I look back in hindsight, I can see that mind has always been there for me. The universe has always given me what I needed, even when it really, really didn't look like that's what I needed. So, for instance, I remember when I was, I think when I was 16 or 17, my mum got really ill. And she was diagnosed with cancer, and eventually she was in hospital, and it looked like it was terminal. And it was something that, being so young for me, was really quite a difficult time. I don't think I'd actually known anybody who died up to that point that I was close to, and my mum was probably the one person that I was really, really close to, and had always supported me. She'd always helped me through the tough times that I had at school. And I was much, much closer to my mum than I was my dad. My sister was closer to my dad. So me and my mum had a real bond. And so when she fell ill, it was a real blow to me. And I really didn't know what to expect. So as the time went on, I was called to go to the hospital and spend some time at the hospital. I alternated with my dad and my sister. I would go to the hospital in the evenings because I was at college at the time, and it was seen to be the right thing to do to go to college. And my dad and my sister would go during the day. So what happened over the course of, it wasn't very long, it was a few weeks. When I did go and see my mum, I would sit by the bedside, I'd hold her hand, and I would watch her slowly getting smaller. I'd watch her slowly kind of switch off in front of me. It was such a tough time, and so I won't go into details, but by the time that my mum entered a coma stage, she'd lost her sight and she'd lost hearing, she'd lost all sorts of things. But just before she went into her coma, she got somebody to give her an A4 piece of paper, and because she couldn't talk, she had to write it down. And what she wrote was, "Steph, please take me home." And she was full of morphine drips, and she was being on the drugs, and she couldn't move. She had to have assistance, and that felt like her last wish to me, for me to take her, you know, back to our house and to look after from there. And it was a real source of pain to me, and I could not work out how to do it. The hospital said it was impossible given the care that she was on, and it made a really, really tough time, really, really painful for me. So what happened was, eventually she slipped into a coma, and the morning that she died, it was in February, I remember it. It was snowing really, really hard. And I was due to go to college, and they said that college had been closed that day because of the snow and freezing pipes and stuff. So instead, I decided to go to the hospital. And it just so happened that my dad and my sister couldn't make it either because of the weather conditions. So I was in the room on my own with my mum, holding her hand. And unexpectedly, we didn't know how long it was going to take, but unexpectedly, she passed away. And that was hard. And I think what happened over the next 40 years was, I always had this feeling that it hadn't happened the right way, that I should have somehow managed to get her home. And sort of make her last wish come true. So it became a bit of an obsession for me. It became a real, real habitual thinking. You know, as soon as, every time I remembered my mum's death, that was the thing that came back to me, and it haunted me. So much, like nothing else, you know. And then when I came to the principles, I remember going on a retreat with Michael, and it was one of those retreats where everybody was kind of talking about their own stuff. And one of the things that I was talking about was this habitual thinking that I had about my mum, And we had a conversation, the group had a conversation about it. It was really, really helpful. But then I went to bed. And I remember it was in Napa. Were you there, Mo?
Yeah.
You were there, weren't you? Yeah. And it was 4 o'clock in the morning, as it usually is with me. The new thought came to me that I, being with my mum at the moment she died, holding her hand, was taking her home. Was taking her back to that place and seeing it for the first time. Back to the formless. And that was such a huge relief, a burden that I've been carrying for 40 years. And it's, I often think about that now, that I had been there on that day when I wasn't supposed to be there, when nobody else was there. The universe had contrived to create that situation for me for some reason. And it's where I was supposed to be. And it seems to me that I had to have that realization about being present and being there for my mum, and being there when she was going home, because sort of I guess a couple of years later when I was looking after my dad, I mean my dad was nearly twice my mom's age when he died, but I had such a different feeling to it. The process of my dad passing on was a thing of beauty, and it was such a gift for me to be there and to be present and to see how it all unfolded for him over a number of months. Without that, without that worldly feeling of grief, without that construct, that idea that we have about how we should be and how that situation should play out, it felt like I could step outside of myself and just do what needed to be done without taking part in that sadness and it being about me, you know. So that was one example of something that I see so differently now. But all throughout my life, there have been, when I look back, there are so many things that have happened that at the time I could not see the wisdom in. I could not see how it could have been any worse. But time and time and time again, I look back and I see how things have played out so beautifully. Whether it's been me having the wisdom to do something, to take action and do something that makes a difference, or whether just the universe just stepped in anyway. but it has all unfolded absolutely perfectly. And that's the gift for me of the path of the soul, the enlightened path, is that somehow I have a sense, not always, I have a sense that all that's ever happening, ever, ever happening in every walk of life, in every activity, in every life, is this dance between the formless and the form. Form is being created from the formless, and then it goes back into the formless, whether it's a life, whether it's a relationship, whether it's my tax returns. And for me, there's a feeling behind that of comfort, to know that we're more than just this person that we think we are, just more than this body. That helps me a lot sometimes when I get totally lost in the world and in my thinking. That's been my experience of going through all the three different paths. Not saying I don't experience the path of the victim or try to be empowered now and again, but just when I get quiet enough, I can see what's really happening. And it's, we are God's co-pilot. We are being guided in every minute. I just love that when we get quiet enough, we can hear that. We can hear the signal as opposed to the noise. What do you think, Mo?
You've got me speechless now. And tears in my eyes. That was beautiful stuff. Got me quiet. And I remember when we were in Napa, Michael used to say, this was my first, in the beginning of the super coach, and he would say, he'd go around the room and ask us, were there about nine of us there, Steph? Eight, nine of us? He would say, are you home? Are you away? And I would always say, I'm home. I'm okay. And it was a very peaceful feeling. And sometimes he would use it as bars on your cell phone. How many bars are you? And it's a good way of gauging, are you home or are you away? When I listened to Michael's video this week, I was like, wow, this is a lot at one time. He packed a lot into this. This to me was like the guts of it all. And it was like, he's talking about a whole lot of stuff here today. And to me, going back to kind of like what Steph said too about the dying and the, you know, I can remember when my baby died, I thought that was the first time God saw me. I said, oh my God, he knows I'm here. Because he came and took the baby. That's the way I used to see it. Like, we just, we're all here. And every now and then, he'll poke you. Say, hey, I see you. And then the same thing, like he went away, and then when I got real sick in my early 30s, I was pretty sick at 32. And they said, you'll be under a doctor's care for the rest of your life. And something just told me, I don't want to be sick. And I just left and never went back to the doctor. It's been 32 years now. No, 20. I can't count. 22 years. 32. 54. Don't want to add an extra 10 years there. But haven't been back. And I don't know why. I just... And then, you know, going through the divorce was awful. 17 years later, when I got divorced at 38, I got divorced. And then not even a year after that, my first husband died suddenly, had a heart attack driving home from work. He was 42 and died in his car. And that was like, oh, awful. And it drove me crazy, kind of like what you were talking about, Steph, that he died alone. I hated it that he died alone. Just like with my baby, when the baby died, even though she was full term, she was 8 2, she died during birth. I hated I never got to hold her. That used to haunt me. But then, you know, as years go by and other things come along, you know, I met my husband that I have now, and then really, you know, we started looking in this direction, which I think all of us, that's why we're all here, because we're all probably more on the, have been victims, trying to get on that empowered path, like we've got to find a way. And when the thing happened to me at the prison on death row, when I saw what I saw, felt what I felt, that to me, is the same as if I had died. What I saw, what I felt, took me to a whole different realm. And it's just something I just can't explain or ever forget. And that unbelievable sense of love that came through, and no judgment on any of these people, anything they had done. And two of the guys in there on death row, you know, murdered my daughter's boyfriend from high school. Not his, her boyfriend, but her mother and 13-year-old daughter. Brutally murdered them, pulled their teeth, raped them, beat them with a bat, you know, set them on fire while they were still alive. They were there. But it was like there was... So it's not like I didn't have any connection with anything of what these people had done, but there was just unbelievable just love and no judgment. It was like, it doesn't matter. It's like sometimes when you're sitting with a client and we're hearing stuff, I used to think too, am I not being compassionate enough, because I'm kind of like, I don't see a problem. You know, every now and then I'm like, I don't see it, even though I fall into it too all the time. But there is a sense of quietness. I thought, am I being cold when I don't feel what they're feeling sometimes? And it's just because I'm seeing it sometimes from a bigger version. Now, other times I get caught up in it. An example this weekend, my nephew was supposed to get married and they called off the wedding. So I ran into some of the family over the weekend, and of course all the talk is, what do you think happened? This, that, and the other. You know, jibber jabber. And I engaged for a few minutes on it and then stepped back and thought, well, what does it matter? You just love them. You know, you just love both of them. there's no right or wrong here. They'll just figure it out. And it's also, I'm kind of all over the place here. The other day, on Thursday, my daughter's bringing home the baby, the new baby. We're all excited about it. Well, I get a call from a client whose house I had listed. His son calls me from the home and says, can you go check on my dad? That he had gotten a call from the mortgage company that the mortgage hadn't been paid and he hadn't been able to reach him in about a week. No answer. So I still had his key from when I had the guy's house listed. I said, sure. So I call him, he doesn't answer. And he's not really old, he's just sick. This guy's been sick for years, he's got a lung disease. And so I go over there, and when I get to the door, there's notes on the door, two notes from nurses that have come, but no answer within the past several days. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to open this door and I'm going to find him dead, right? So I called the son on the phone. And I said, hey, I've knocked on the door. I keep calling your dad. He doesn't answer. I've got the key. Just stay on the line with me as I go in. He said, okay. So I said, which room does he sleep in? So he's telling me. So I open the door. I call his name. I hear nothing, but I can see his oxygen line going across the living room down the hall. So I called his name out a couple of times, and finally on the third time, I hear a faint response coming from the bedroom. And he says, and so, you know, I have the son still on the phone. I said, you know, he's answering me. He's alive. And he says, don't come in. I don't have any clothes on. And I just thought a minute and I just said, well, too bad, I'm coming in anyway. I got to see you. So I opened the door. And he's sitting there at his computer with his oxygen. And he did have on a black shirt and his underwear, his boxer shorts. And so I said, oh, you lied to me. You have clothes on. I was just trying to get a little, you know, smile out of him. But he, you know, chuckled. But he ended up, he was unclear of the days. There were some things he didn't know and some things he did know. So I get off the phone with the son. So he and I talk a little bit. But it's hard for him to talk. He's got a lot of the fluid, the gurgles in between words. And so I go to the store. I get him some food. I come back. And I said to him again, I said, Rolf, I said, what else can I do? What can I do for you? What else can I do for you? And he looked at me and he just says, all I need is for you to smile. And I thought, and there again, it took me back to, it's not about us. It's that conduit that Michael talks about. It's that soul to soul. All he needed, he didn't need the soup from the store. He didn't need me to. And he was like, I just need you to smile. And it was the coolest thing. That it just goes back again. I mean, we all fall into the patterns of it all day long. We all think we have to do something. And I've noticed some of the biggest things I've seen my clients when I do sit in, especially coaching sessions with people, is when I'm sitting there and I say absolutely nothing. It's almost by the time at the end, they see it. They feel it. And you don't have to say anything. It's kind of like with your mom, Steph. Sometimes we read too much into it, and it's just simple. It's just simple. All of a sudden, it just clicks, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's it. And we just all go back to that place. And this morning, I was laying in bed thinking about this call, and I was thinking something about my glasses as well. My glasses are kind of like God, because when I put them on, I see things clearer. And then I said, well, no, the glasses wouldn't be God. My eyes would be God. And so I'm thinking these little things that Michael likes to come up with. What do you call them? Are they metaphors?
Metaphors.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know what they call them. Okay. And then finally, I just laid there and I said, oh, it really doesn't even matter. It doesn't matter. It just is. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter which is what and which is, it just is. And really when it all, anything and everyone needs is just love. No matter any situation. And even Rolf, when I sat with him the other day, going back again this afternoon, the scene, because he refuses to go to the doctor. He won't let him put him in the hospital. He won't leave his home. And to me, he knows nobody can help him. And there's nothing wrong with that. If that's the way he wants to go by himself at home, that's his choice. But I think just because he's had nurses, but he fires everybody who comes in. So he doesn't let anybody in the house. But all he wanted that day was that love, just to feel his soul again. And I found, you know, and to me, going back to the prison a little bit, everything clicked with the three principles, with Supercoach. When it finally, all this trying to make sense of everything, it kind of all made sense, but then it's like everything came together like a grid, like a puzzle. Everything that ever happened in my life, everything, as bad or tragic as it was, some of it, and good, a lot of it's very good. It just all, I would go through it all over again to get to where I'm at now, to see what I see now, to feel what I feel now. And all I can say is, is just see love and feel love. And anything, anytime you get caught up, just step back and just look at it through that non-judgmental eyes, and everything just kind of goes away. I hope we haven't brought anybody down.
Yeah.
Because it's a good feeling.
Shall we ask people what they're thinking? Oh, just find out if we've
Right. Peter, I'm going to bring you on. Go ahead, Peter.
Hey, Peter.
Hello there. Hi, Steph. Hi, Mo. Hi, everyone. Wow, it's difficult to follow that, but I could so relate to the stories, particularly yours, Steph. I loved this week's video, and my own personal circumstances in the last few weeks have showed me something which I, at the time, I don't think I really appreciated. My mother-in-law had been in a dementia home for 4.5 years, and a few weeks ago she was taken to hospital because she couldn't breathe.
Is Peter there, or is that
I think Peter's frozen.
He is.
Peter, can you hear us still? I think his connection's probably dropped.
Yeah.
Right, what I'll do is I'll bring on Jackie, and then if Peter, if you can hear us, you might want to jump off the call and jump back on again. And we'll do that. So Jackie, I'm going to unmute you and bring you on.
Okie dokie. I am seeing so clearly that the perfection of the unfolding has nothing to do with what happens. And that's what that is. And when my dad was dying, very long time ago, I was in my late 20s, and I desperately wanted to like have a spiritual conversation with him and talk about dying. I was all into that stuff, and I was the spiritual one in the family, and I thought that was my job, and I never knew how to bring it up. I was afraid it might frighten him or something, so I never brought it up. And at some point in the years after, it had occurred to me all I needed to do was ask if he wanted to talk. But it bothered me all that time. I thought it was so simple, and I could have done it. But 25 years later, my mom was dying, and I thought, oh, I'm ready. I'm ready. Okay, I'm ready. All I need to do is ask, and I'm going to open that spiritual door, and I'm like, okay, mom said, like, you know, anything you want to talk about? And she said, no. I'd spent 25 years waiting. She didn't want to have the conversation. I was ready. And I don't know if my dad would have wanted to have the conversation or not. But the perfection of the unfolding is it has nothing to do with that. It's in our, we'll see it if we look with faith and with understanding and with love and with presence. But the river flows and all these thoughts and these feelings. When I was driving in this morning, I was thinking about something, and it wasn't even anything real. I was talking to someone last night who was real sad, but I just had this daydream going on, very dramatic. And I was singing a sad song in the daydream. And I got to the end, and I was like all into it on the freeway. And this tear started rolling down my cheek. I'm on the fucking freeway. Crying about this sad song I'm singing in my, it didn't exist, and it wasn't even a memory. All this stuff, it just ripples on the water. It just ripples on the water.
Yeah.
There isn't. It's that. It's that. Mm-hmm. We're alive so that we can live.
Yeah,
that's it. It's, and I'm here at work. I'll probably be upset about something within an hour. Mm-hmm. You know, it's and then someone will make me laugh, and someone will, and it isn't that we don't. It isn't that it doesn't matter. Because that's the thing I think that happens with people. We start thinking, well, I know it's all just my thought, you know, so this someone dies or someone something, but we're here for all of it. We're here, so the more we feel, and the more all of it, just the more alive we are. Yeah. And it doesn't matter. Right. It doesn't matter. Wow. It's perfect.
Michael talked about the hero's journey, Jackie. Have you ever heard of the hero's journey? He talked about it a little bit on the video.
I don't know if I've heard. Oh, I'm sure. Joseph Campbell and all that.
Joseph Campbell.
Yeah.
I used to watch that when I was doing doing my empoweredness, right? Trying to figure all this out. And oh, that made such sense to me, that hero's journey, right? But then I thought, oh, like Michael said, that's exhausting. That means, because you ever remember that feeling like, oh, everything's going just right. Everything's so good. You feel so high that you're scared to feel so good because you know something bad shit's fixing to happen, because that always does. Something always knocks you back down, mm-hmm. right? And now, through the principles, through this inside out, it's kind of like, oh, it's okay. You don't, the journey part, that little circle journey, like you have to go through all this. You fight all those demons and you get there and you get this and then life is wonderful and then you're going to go back down again. Then it comes back up again. It's like the thinking about that is exhausting to me. But now just this knowing of, it's really just how you look at it, how you think about it, that it doesn't become a problem anymore. Are you there, Jackie? Is she muted?
Yes. Sorry, I just, there was some background noise on Jackie's line.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm in the warehouse. No, I know, we're cycling right back to what Steph said at the very beginning about the dance. It's the dance. Mm-hmm. And there's freedom in the, I used to always think, thinking didn't matter or not seeing the importance of things had to be important, all of that, or life had no meaning. And the less meaning I see, freer I. That's all.
Thank you, Jackie.
And the more I can dance with life.
I love that, Jackie. Perfection of the unfolding, regardless of what happens. I love that.
Right, Peter is back. Unfrozen and back. Peter, back to you.
Sorry about that. I lost connection. There's too much energy on the line.
You can never lose connection, Peter.
what I was going to say was that Mother will be in for 4.5 years in a home, but then when she went into hospital, we were told to come back in 48 hours, but within less than 24 hours, we got a phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning to say that we ought to go to the hospital. And when we arrived there, we held her hand, and within 15 minutes, she passed away. And although it was very raw at the time, what I've come to see is that there was an element of perfection there, because in the home, they didn't have 24/7 night care, whereas at the hospital, they did. So when we got the phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning, it was simply because someone was there looking after her. And it allowed us to make the journey and be with her in the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And although it was very raw at the time, I'm almost in awe at the perfection of that process that allowed us to be there at the end.
Yeah.
Because she's never been in hospital, and she was only in there 24 hours after 4.5 years of dementia. And so there is a, we can't necessarily see it at the time, but there is a perfection there that gives me goosebumps. Yeah. And I think when I was listening to the video today, I think there's a, because I think the ego can be very clever, and certainly the little voice in my head can be very clever, that sometimes I'm not sure whether it's my inner wisdom speaking to me, or whether I'm trying to convince myself it's my inner wisdom as to a particular course of action. But if I've worked on some thoughts on this, but if I'm understanding the process right, the inner wisdom has a freshness and a responsiveness in the moment, a different sort of feeling to maybe what may be an ego, cleverly disguised ego insight or idea. Mm. I think I'm at the stage now, because I've got that awareness of trusting the process a bit more. I don't think it's a faith issue, it's just whether sometimes I still get caught by, well, actually, I follow the path, but maybe this sort of 10% of me thinking, well, is that actually ego, or is that genuinely insight and wisdom? So, I don't know whether you can just sort of, say some words to that, because I do know, and there is a deep knowing and a liberation that I'm always connected to this. It's infinite wisdom. But now and again, I'm just not sure whether I'm being tricked by that crafty voice.
I think that's a really good question, and it often comes up in my mind as well. I think that for me, I don't know what anybody else's experience is, but if I hear wisdom, it comes with a feeling. A good feeling, and it comes with a certainty. Now, I know this is different to other people. I know that other people feel it and hear it, see it differently. But for me, when I really get a strong sense of wisdom coming through, it comes with an absolute certainty that, oh, that's obvious. There's no decision to be made here. There's no. So that sounds really cool. But what I'd also like to say is that for me, given the perfection of the unfolding that Jackie was talking about, for me, there is no right and wrong. There is, even if it is my ego talking and not my wisdom, I'm still okay. And it will still unfold perfectly. It might go off the track for a little while, but I know I'm always going to come back on track. So there isn't, for me, there's not that desperation to know the difference, because I don't always hear it. I do what you do, but there's a comfort to know that we are always connected, and there is a perfection to it, and we will always come back onto the GPS, whatever we decide to do. That's the kindness of the design.
That's very helpful, actually, because I think I may have been tempted to think of it as right or wrong, knowing that there's no right or wrong. It just takes it all away.
I was thinking, as Jackie was talking about, that quote from Shakespeare, is it something, there is no right or wrong, just our thinking makes it so. When we live in a world of thought, when there is nothing but thought, we're making it all up. We're making it up whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah.
So it takes the pressure off, doesn't it?
Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Beautiful question.
Thank you, Peter. We've got lots of hands. I don't know that we're going to get to everyone, so we might have to continue this conversation on Facebook. But I'm going to bring on Simon because we never got to Simon last week. So go ahead, Simon.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Simon.
Hiya. What a beautiful talk. The thing that came to me was just now was the right and wrong stuff. Yeah. Somebody caught me out on this about. I was talking about, I think it might have been Sarah, about the, you know, the opposite of love is fear, and I picked that up from somewhere. I don't know. And she called me out on that, and I kind of got it to a certain degree or intellectually, but I've just got it right now. There is no opposite to love.
Wow.
So if there's no opposite to love, there is no right and wrong, is there?
Yeah. So that reminds me of what Michael asked me once. He says, he's asking me about evil. I think that's what he was asking me about, evil things. He wanted to know what I thought about that. And I told him, I didn't believe in evil. And I said, it's probably out there. I guess there's a yin and a yang to everything, right? Kind of what you're talking about. The opposite of love is fear. I said, but I just don't give any attention to that. So to me, I don't see anything as evil. And Michael said, darkness is nothing but the absence of light, which to me, light would be love. It's always there. Sometimes we just don't see it. We're just not looking in that direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, there is no right or wrong. And that's how sometimes I say, it's so quick for me to jump back and remember, don't take it so serious. We get so serious about this and we get caught up in our thinking. Then I go, oh, this is so easy to fall off and get caught up in it.
Because Steph asked, should we ask what people are thinking? And I was going, no, ask me what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
Isn't that the same thing, Simon? Sorry.
Yeah.
But just to, I think what you were saying, Simon, is I love the thing about love and fear, because to me, and it's again what Mo was saying, is that to me, love is the ground we walk on. That's the truth. That's what's there when everything else that we create in our thought and in our feelings subsides. Love is what's left. And I think somebody once said to me something about, you know, there is only ever love and a call to love. So, you know, fear is a call to love. Evil is a call to love. That's all ever people want to experience. They just don't know how to get there. So there is, I like that. It is only love or a call to love, because love is all there is, aside from what goes on up here. Does that make sense?
No. But that's okay.
Yeah. I appreciate your honesty. If you want if you want another conversation about that,
that'd be great. Yeah.
Message me, Simon.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I'll let somebody else dive in. Thank you very much, guys. But beautiful call, really beautiful.
Simon.
Felt great. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Simon. Okay, Mitchell, do you want to come on?
Sure. Looking at the time, I'm aware of that. So there's so much I want to say because there's so much here. Really beautiful call. I'm really moved. And I was, I don't even know where to begin. I want to begin by saying that I spent this last weekend with Michael Neal and Gold Kransky. I was blown away. So it was my first chance to be in a workshop with Michael and with George. And, I'm nodding my head in sort of disbelief at the flow and the ease that showed up in my life yesterday, that showed up so far this morning. I'm just really moved. I have lived my life a lot going down the empowered path. And then I've had moments when it clearly was not going to follow me. And I needed to find some other source of sustenance to move forward. And, I'm thinking of like the first time that occurred in a really profound way was when I was in medical school. And it was my first semester at an Ivy League medical school, and mom and dad had done everything to set me up and send me there and force me to go, basically, because it wasn't really my first choice. When I realized I was in the wrong place, I knew that my future would look really great if I graduated from medical school and was a doctor and all that. But my heart was not in it. And so after my first semester of medical school with honors and classes, I took a leave of absence. And I had no idea where I was going to go. And when I came to the realization that was what I needed to do, it was like a bolt of lightning. It came to me so clearly and so strong. And that was over 30 years ago. And since then, I've been on quite a zigzag of a course to find my way to what was meaningful for me and what would give my life, have my life be something worth living. And the next iteration of that, the next kind of really big, momentous time when I had to make a shift and go soul searching again was just a year ago. And corporate life wore me down. And I just couldn't do it anymore. And I was working with a career coach, and we were looking at all the possible careers I could do and everything. And then one morning on the floor at home doing my morning exercises, a bolt of lightning, it just kind of hit me to become a coach. And so I've been on the path since then. And I guess I just want to sum it up because I know now it's 10 o'clock in the morning. And I just want to say it ain't been easy, but it's been so worth it. You know, when I find myself in a place where I am today now, and the last year has not been easy. But in that time, I'm about to be certified as a co-active coach through Coaches Training Institute. But halfway through that, I found the three principles, and it's dragging me, and it's not dragging me, and it's sucking me. I don't know what it's doing, but it's definitely pulling me there, and I'll be in Super Coach Academy 2017, and can't wait to be there. And, just this last weekend, Really moved and grateful to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mitchell.
That was beautiful,
thank
Mitchell.
Thank you. Yeah. Bless you. Thank you.
Are you there, Steph?
I'm here.
Okay, I can't see you anymore, Steph. No, you had left the building.
No, I'm still here. Still here.
I want to thank everyone for today's call. I thought it was a beautiful call. I love what everyone shared. I just love the feeling that came through today. And all I want to say at closing, Steph, is it just leaves me with the feeling of everyone just loving themselves. And I think it all comes from us just loving ourselves, not taking everything so serious, and just loving ourselves. That's kind of how I want to leave it today.
That's beautiful. I'll echo that. That's perfect. I can't top that. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Thank you, everybody. It's been an amazing call. I've really enjoyed it today. It's been beautiful. I always enjoy it. It's been beautiful.
And please post anything on Facebook. I'd love to read what anybody else has to say.
Yeah. Sweet. Yeah. Bob, sorry we never got a chance to get to you. But you want to post anything on Facebook, Maureen and Steph, I'm sure we'll get back to you. So thank you all very much, guys, and same time, same place.
See you later. Bye.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.
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 Thank you, bye-bye.
Bye.